Hello, everybody. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Moonshot Podcast. This episode, my two good friends from law school, Josh Cooper and Corey Butler, join me. Josh is a criminal defense attorney and Corey is a prosecutor, which makes a fun dynamic. And I am way out in left field doing something completely different in probate and estate planning. The three of us talk about how we, as average students, survived law school, the struggles, and the tips we give people who are thinking about going to law school. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Pledge Roofing. If you live in Oklahoma and you have roof damage, Pledge is the company for you. Click the link in the show notes for their website where you can contact them to get a free quote.
All right, I got my buddies Josh Cooper and Corey Butler here. What's up, fellas?
Oh, man, I'm just living the dream.
Hi.
We all graduated law school together somehow. Don't know how we did that, but we did.
Well, a hope and a prayer.
Yeah. Groupthink.
Yeah, I don't know if there was a group that like studied together and did all that that were just worse students just in general. I think we were the best at the worst.
Oh my god,
the best of the worst is a good way to put it.
It's true though, because like I think like I don't know about your class rank, Corey, but I know ours were pretty similar, and they definitely were the best of the worst.
Yeah. No, my class rank is here's my issue. The first year at when I was interning, I realized no one cares. No one cares about your class rank. You can go all day and try your hardest and do whatever you want to do. If you want to go into the DA's office, all you have to do is intern there, show up, learn something. And then you're good. No one cares about class rank.
For the DA's office. Now, I did just interview for a bunch of big law firms downtown, and they do care.
Oh, they do.
Yes.
Care.
Yeah. 100%. Even if you're out of law school for 2 years, they still care for some stinking reason.
Ugh.
It's like I have all these great recommendations from these great attorneys, and you're still asking me my class rank and my GPA.
Yeah.
Like it matters.
It doesn't. Like, it doesn't. Plus, yeah. People have things going on, too. I mean, like in law school, some people have extracurriculars that they're doing. That, you know, make them not study as much or whatever. It doesn't mean that they're not as smart. It means they're not trying as hard.
Yeah.
Like, I had a kid. Yeah. And then I had two kids.
Which is not, it's not recommended. It's not on the list of recommended.
They actually told us don't have kids.
Yeah.
In orientation. They said, don't do this.
I was like, too late.
Yeah. They also said a bunch of other things. We're like, that's probably not good advice as like in normal life. But where we're going right now, it makes sense.
Yeah. Like, be selfish.
Yeah, it's like, be selfish. Tell them you have to be selfish right now. Like, that doesn't put a strain on a marriage at all.
The wild thing, I feel like I didn't really do that much. It was, like, right around finals week, I did a little bit. But after the first year, I tried. My class rank was much higher. It was a good time. But also, I just did not see the fruits of that labor, and I stopped caring. And then I never really had to give up a ton. I was in law school. I would give up right around like when I was in school, So no texting and none of that. I was paying attention for the most part. Unless I was sitting next to one of you jabrones.
That was like the whole first year.
Yeah.
The back row.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we were kings of the back row though.
Yeah, I love my seat.
It was great.
You know, we should get your wife in here and ask her what her perspective is on this whole thing.
Oh my gosh, my wife hated when I was in law school, but not for the reasons that you think, okay? No, my wife hated when I was in law school because she thought I should be studying more.
Oh.
Yeah, she's a tryhard. She's like a super nerd. Mm-hmm. She graduated from nursing school with honors, like she was in a sorority.
What a nerd.
Yeah, she was in the Honor Society. She got a ring, like it was a whole big thing. Mm. She would study like 16 hours a day. And, you know, I mean, like, I would just kind of...
We never did that.
No, I was just going to do stuff.
We pulled a few, like, really late nights, like
mm-hmm.
the night or two before a final. I'd say
3 days before a final was when we really kick it in. We're like, we don't have an outline. Who has an outline made? And then we try and make one. And then we just go to one of our friends. We go to Elise and be like, hey,
yeah,
you got an outline? And she's such a nice person.
Yeah.
And I don't know. You've had people, too, that like, I don't know, 2L year, 3L year.
Madison King, bro. Yeah. Madison King. She was Madison Ewald at that time.
So I think what we can tell people, like from our experience, is that the number one thing you should do when you get to law school, if you're an average student, which we all three, I think, are, right?
Yeah.
Is that you should definitely find a group.
Yeah. That's number one.
Number one. You should, you, and then don't, like, I know some law schools are super competitive, but I think that the one reason I got through it, because, like, I don't know if you guys remember this, but, like, I started off my first year in 2017, a year before y'all.
Yeah.
And then I had some family issues and stuff, ended up having to restart. But I didn't have a group like we had where I could trust and depend on others to help me when I didn't know what was going on.
Right.
Yeah.
I was on my own.
Right.
So I didn't know what I didn't know.
Yep.
And so it helped to have, you know, you guys and other people in our group where, like, I could just bounce ideas off and understanding, because some of them had gone through it, or siblings gone through it, or knew what better than I did, you know, and it gave me perspective. Whereas, like, my first time going through, I had no idea what, I didn't know what I didn't know. Yep. Then I figured out what I didn't know, and then I had to restart.
Yeah. Somehow the stars aligned and us three in Honeypot.
Freaking Honeypot.
We all met.
That first day.
The first day of orientation.
Yeah. It was quick, too.
Mm-hmm. And it was just like, oh, yeah, we're all like on the same level.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We're gonna
Because what would have been terrible is if, like, I would have connected with, like, Elise first. Mm-hmm. It would have never worked.
No.
It would have never worked.
No.
Because, like, there would have been nothing there to keep us together. And then I would have been alone. Because y'all would have already found each other.
Yeah.
Like, it was weird, man. It was just such a cool thing that, like, it was almost immediate. Maybe it was just that look. That look of, like, Dad, I don't freaking belong here. Yeah.
The imposter syndrome was just seeping out of our skin.
Yeah. And we all kind of just met up and started talking. I was like, this freaking big guy right here, he knows a thing or two.
I definitely don't. Well, yeah. It depends on what thing you're talking about.
I mean, y'all both look like the kind of guys that I could go and, like, have a beer with or something. Or just, like, hang out and have a good time. And I think that was, like, the start was, like, mm-hmm. do we actually like each other?
Mm-hmm.
And then can we navigate, like, our different studying styles and whatever?
I think sometimes we're able to give each other room, too, when, like, one of us wasn't able to handle the others, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was a guilt. Sometimes I would just leave, you know, and go to my – because sometimes I needed to focus, and you guys did, too, you know, and it worked out. I think it was really a good, respectable, like – give and take on that.
Yeah.
That's probably a good thing too, is just the give and take. It's like, because we have different studying styles and we do things a little bit differently, and our brains work differently, that's a strength in one aspect because we can be together. Mm-hmm. And what you heard during a lecture, I heard slightly differently. And then we can kind of go round and round until we find out, like, which one of us was right. I mean, weren't we, like, keeping a tally at one point?
Yeah,
like, I mean, we were going in, like, which one of us was right, and we would argue all the time.
But it wasn't ever out of, you know, there's no spite or malice.
No, no.
It was just who we, you know.
It was always good-natured, out of respect, and just, mm-hmm. like, trying to figure out what it was that we were doing. Because we came in humble enough to say, okay, we definitely don't know, but we both heard something, so let's figure out what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then we kind of argue about how we see it.
That's the worst thing about law, too, is there's very rarely, like, it's very rarely black and white. Like, 90% of it's always in the gray, so there is that room for, like, argument. And it's like, well, this is how I see it, or this is how you see it. And, I mean, really, that's how you learn, like, good critical thinking, which really is the point of law school. It's not to teach you how to be a lawyer. It's to teach you how to think like a lawyer.
It could definitely not teach me how to be a lawyer.
No, not even a little bit.
Not even a tad.
Yeah. The thing I learned, though, coming out of law school, if I were to tell somebody how to prepare for law school, I would tell them to study for the final exam instead of study for each individual class.
Yeah.
Because studying for the class is just like, well, I don't, at least for me, I would just study so I wouldn't look stupid if I got called on. Which half the time I got called on, it looks stupid anyway.
Well, that's the design too, right? That's how it's designed.
So it's like, I look stupid anyway. So, like, what's the point of me trying to study to not look stupid?
Mm-hmm.
So I should have, like, in hindsight, like, that's what I would tell somebody, or that's what I wish I would have done, is study for the final exam. So come final exam time, I'm ready. Which is what Elise did.
Mm-hmm.
She hardly studied during, like, actual finals week.
Mm-hmm. She had an outline done as she went. She was a good law student. That's why when I was like, you know, it would be cool if, like, there was a podcast out there where, like, a normal dude who's just going to law school could get some tips just to survive.
Yeah.
Because, like, if our friend Elise, who we talk a lot about her, because we all, I think, you know, we think highly of her, and we have great respect for her as a person and as a lawyer now and as a student for sure. Mm-hmm. But if we look at her and we look at us, there's every podcast on anywhere about how to get through law school is for people like her, trying to make you like her.
Yeah.
And let's just face it, half of us aren't going to be
right
like her. Like, she was just had everything to get. I looked at her and I was like, you have everything together. You're doing well. I'm sure she was. Felt like her life was chaos the whole time. We're just, you know, painting a good picture for her. But, like, I just always, I just think that there needs to be, like, I think maybe in the future that'd be a cool podcast to do where you talk about, like, step by step, you know, how can you just survive?
Yeah.
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 I think survival tip number one, be okay with looking stupid.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something that, like, because I went to school later, and I think all of us kind of did,
mm-hmm.
I passed that spot where, you know, because you go to the traditional route, you're in high school, you immediately go to college, and then from college, you go directly into law school. You have no experience doing anything. Mm. Like, all you've done is school your entire life, and it's been pretty similar all the way through, and then it's just been ramping up in difficulty. But I had experience going out and, like, working and having multiple jobs and failing spectacularly at things. So I never came in with that, like, oh, yeah, I'm super smart. I know everything. I can't look stupid because of whatever. Like, I didn't want to look stupid. But if I look stupid, I was like, okay, yeah, I look stupid. Let's keep it moving now.
Right.
Because it was never, like, something that would, like, devastate me. Like, I mean, people tell horror stories of people running out of classrooms, you know, crying and all this stuff. And I'm not going to say it didn't happen. It didn't happen to me, but I'm, you know, it happens.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to.
Did I tell you about that time? Because I had that mentality too. My first semester, where it didn't go well for me, and the professor went down the line, and I was the fourth person down the line on the same question, and I gave her three different answers that it could be, and they were all wrong. And I go, well, I don't know what you want me to say that, because I've been in court for 3 years before this, every single day working as in a previous job,
yeah,
as a court advocate.
Right.
I wasn't an attorney, but I was in court, so I knew that, like, hey, just admit when you're wrong and move on.
Yeah.
And so I was like, hey, I don't know the answer. I'm sorry. Obviously, you have a different answer than I'm thinking of. She goes, you even read? I go, yeah, I read. I just don't know what you want me to do here.
Yeah.
And I was like, might as well just move on to the next guy. And she goes, no, I'm not going to move on to the next guy. We're going to keep going. And I was like, oh. And she goes, and from now on, anytime I ask what a word means in class, you have to have the answer. You're now the definitions
guy.
The definitions guy.
And I still live in, everyone talks about that to this day.
Yeah.
Is that professor still there? She's still there.
Yeah. But I was just like, so I did. So I spent more time on that class. I ignored all the rest of my classes. So I looked up every dang word. And that, and every single case we had to read that I didn't know. And I don't know if you guys know this. I'm an Oklahoma native, educated in Oklahoma. I don't know a lot of words. I did a lot of word looking.
Yeah.
You know, it was bad.
Well, I'm not Oklahoma native, was not educated in Oklahoma. I would have been in the same boat.
I think I would have done maybe 2% better.
Mm.
Just because... Because
that's how you feel.
I mean, I do feel that way, yeah, yes. Yeah. But... No, I think I would have done 2% better because I was an avid reader.
Mm.
So I'm pretty decent with words. I cannot spell them. If this was a spelling bee, wouldn't be able to help you at all.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with words like that don't sound like you can't sound them out because they got extra crap in there.
Mm-hmm.
Can't do it.
That's just American for you. American's stupid.
Yeah.
Speaking American don't make sense.
I think it's English. Yeah. I think it's English.
Well, we speak American.
No, American
here. We speak American. We don't speak English.
If we spoke
English, it would sound very different. We got away from that. I think we fought a war about it.
The thing is, what happened was we kept the language and they moved on. That's what happened.
So we're speaking, you know,
actual English. Yeah. And they're speaking some random posh thing they made up afterwards.
Hey, I'm about it.
Yeah, I read a thing on that once. I don't know if it's true.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Reddit? Was it wrong, Reddit?
I don't know where it was. We should have Jude look it up. Where's he at?
He's asleep.
What about some funny stories from law school?
It's hard. I don't know.
Man.
You have to be pretty funny to begin with.
I don't know. I feel like, man, wasn't there that time that you said something wild in class?
Oh, dude, I don't know. People told me I was funny. I'm like, I'm not trying to be funny. I'm just answering the damn. I'm just answering the questions. I'm not trying to be funny. They asked me a question. I'm just giving them a blunt answer.
Yeah.
And no one seems to like that.
No, you say some wild things sometimes.
You should see me in court now.
Oh, I would love that. I would love
that. How is your job going?
Oh, dude, it's okay. You know, you know, I told Corey in the beginning of law school, yeah, I'm going to go criminal defense. And then I took a solid right.
Yeah.
And was like, I'm going to go civil litigation.
Right.
You know, bad faith, PI, personal injury, that kind of stuff. And that's what I was. And then the firm I was with, we had some infrastructure issues and I wasn't able to come on as an attorney. So I had to switch and I got brought on by an attorney in another town that I knew from way back when who does only criminal and family. And with a side of PI, and wants to kind of expand the PI side. And I was like, okay, that would be great. But I have no idea. I'm not saying I don't know what I'm doing, but like, I don't know what I'm doing. So it's, you know, so, but I know enough not to get myself or the client in trouble, right?
Yeah.
But like, there's questions the client will ask me. I'm like, can we go to jury trial on that? I have no idea. You know, like, there's some things in family law you can't go on jury trial on, some things you can.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I just don't know the answers right off the bat because I haven't interned during law school or got experience doing that. So I'm learning on the fly. But my boss is really into the mentorship part of it.
Yeah.
Like, he really wants me to be mentored and feel like I'm mentored. And he wants to make sure that I feel like I'm taken care of. And that is the biggest thing for me in a job mm-hmm. is to make sure that I'm given the tools to succeed and not just left out to dry. And I don't know if there's a guy from the other section who I'm friends with, you know, Ty, I don't know if you guys know who he is, but he's had a couple firms where they just left him out to dry. I don't know if I should say his name or not, but after he's already graduated, they were just like, didn't give him room to succeed or tools.
Right.
They hired him to get some work done and they made it where they could get rid of him kind of thing.
Right.
You know, and that's just terrible to me.
Yep.
Yeah. And I'm loving my job right now though. I'm cover all of North Central Oklahoma. We're from Tulsa County, Oklahoma County. And all these little small, one of the Pawnee County barely has air conditioning.
God. You know?
Like they have window units. They don't have central air.
Oh my gosh.
Where's Pawnee County?
In Pawnee.
Okay.
Yeah. It's, I don't know what else you want me to say.
I've been all over the state. I've been to Rogers County. You know, I was in Cherokee County earlier this week. Never been to Pawnee County.
Yeah, Pawnee County is like, it's down the road, down 412 on the way to Tulsa from Stillwater.
Okay.
So, but they don't have the barely of air conditioning. And then like Noble County as well. And Kay County, we're in those counties, you know. And they don't have air conditioning too. But it's just interesting people in those counties too. Like it's just, and you know, you'll get cases where you have someone who came in from out of town. And now they're stuck in this court system with this podunk county,
yeah.
And they're used to some big city, and they just don't know how to deal with it. You know,
yeah.
It's and we have to explain to them like, well, you're in a small town. You know, there's no cease and desist letters here. We can't tell this lady at the flower shop not to spread bad gas about you. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
It's just it's interesting dynamic. Yeah. It's different than I'm used to. Yeah.
So, what is it that you do for everyone listening?
Oh, so I do criminal and family law. I'm an associate attorney for the number one law firm in Stillwater, Oklahoma.
And criminal, like, what's your guys' forte? Like,
what DUIs, do you, mostly.
DUIs, yeah.
I do most of the misdemeanor docking on DUIs, whereas my boss handles the felonies. But, like, I mean, Stillwater's a college town. Oklahoma State's there. Mm-hmm. A lot of DUIs go through there.
Sure.
And it's you know, and I'm realizing that like a DUI is actually not as bad. I'm not trying to make people feel like it's you can get a DUI and be okay with it, but like getting like a non-aggravated DUI, it's a bump in the road if you let it be.
Yeah.
And I always thought like growing up, oh my gosh, it sticks with you forever, you never get a job again, you're never able to drive again. You know, but it actually just, you know, you can the way that they've set it up now, it's actually pretty lenient
mm-hmm.
when it comes to the over, and especially if you get a good DA, you know, a good ADA, whether they're not just trying to railroad somebody, just to railroad them,
yeah.
Which happens. I've experienced that so far already where I'm just like, this is ridiculous. You know, first time offense, never had a speeding ticket, you know, they're underage, so it's no tolerance. You know, in Oklahoma, no tolerance. If they have 0.08 is the legal limit. But if you blow a 0.1 and you're underage, you still get a DUI.
Yep. 100%.
And, you know, and that can be, you know, I can be devastating for a kid.
I think the range of punishment on that is lower, though.
Yeah, it's not aggravated. Yeah. Well, no, not for that. No, it's still, you still have to go through the IDAP program. You still got to go through the Mothers Against Drunk Driving stuff. You got to do all that stuff still.
Yeah, but on normal misdemeanor, it's 0 to 1. And then deferred's up to 7, obviously. I don't know that the... I think if you're under 21 and it's an under 21 DUI, it's not 0 to 1.
I think it still is.
We'll have to look it up.
You have to look it up. We'll look it up. I'm just, I guess I think of, because that's what I've been pleading to. So
maybe that's like an Oklahoma County like rule that we have.
It might be.
Don't do them.
Because, I mean, they do have norms, right? So there's a statute and then there's the norms of the county.
Right. Yeah.
And the DA, ADA. And right now I've been doing a lot of, on the family side, I've been doing some. What's funny about it is a lot of people, and I did Indian Child Welfare for Cherokee Nation before I went to law school. And that's what I went to law school thing I was going back and doing. And I thought I'd never do it again. And it really kind of made me feel sad when I graduated. I was like, I'm not going to do that anymore. And now I've got 3 cases right now that deal with the Indian Child Welfare Act that I had to, I'm coming in, I'm making sure I'm done right. And, you know, and I'm really excited about those things too. And, like, you know, it's not like the best money in the world. It's not like, you know, previously, like in personal injury and stuff like that, you can make a ton of money, mm-hmm. you know, but it still isn't a bad living. But, like, you get to see people get helped every single day.
Right. Yeah.
And, like, in the core with you, right, like, you're on the other side of it. Yeah. Right.
The better side of it, some might say.
But you get to be, you get to, but you get to use, it's definitely not the better side. Because you're literally not helping. No one helping you. The thing is, here's what Corey does. You don't want to help you by choking you less.
No. This is what happens. You help the individual. I help the state.
What does the state need you for?
To keep drunk drivers from killing people.
That's fair. That's true.
Yeah.
That's fair.
You know what the state's also good at?
Taking your money.
Yeah. Or putting you in jail when you're innocent.
Yeah, that too.
Oh, gosh. Really?
That's true.
I have a firm policy. An issue for me than stealing my money.
Yeah, I have a firm policy of not prosecuting innocent people.
Oh, well, how do you know they're innocent until you're proven guilty?
You'd be surprised how often you can really tell.
Oh, you know what I found out this week? Because of a charge. Hopefully this comes out in like a month when this is all out, right?
Or tomorrow, whatever.
But like, you know, birth certificate like isn't your property. It's like your driver's license. It's like, my understanding, like what I looked up is like owned by the state. And so like if you steal someone's birth certificate, like it's not even yours to be stolen from you. What? You just have a possessor interest in it.
Yeah. Kind of so makes sense. I mean, it's like issued by the state, so it's like state property. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is interesting.
Yeah, that's wild.
Because someone got charged with larceny.
Yeah, who gets charged with larceny?
Yeah, and it wasn't even that person. It was someone else that stole it, and it was that person's birth certificate that was stolen. But they drove them there.
It's weird.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I often read the facts of cases, and I'm like, yeah, we're not charging that.
Yeah.
That seems like a mess I don't want to get into.
Yeah.
How much control do you have over that? Do you have like a supervisor that makes that decision or do you get to decide that?
So by and large, our office is really good about letting us have our discretion because that's 100% what our job is discretion. We are not hired to be robots that, you know, okay, this is it every time.
You're a missile, not a rocket.
Right. Because the facts matter. And every case is going to be a little bit different. So, and there's going to be better facts for us, better facts for the defense. Maybe there's going to be something in there that doesn't look right. So we, you know, do something a little bit different with it. But as far as the actual charging, most of that is just going to be us without any kind of real oversight, unless there's some sort of issue.
Right.
Or if it's something like pretty serious, like a murder or something like that.
Yeah.
Those will go up to supervisors. But like I'm on general felonies. So any kind of general family that comes in, it's just going to be me. Like, I'm going to be the one looking at it. I'm going to be the one charging it. Until there comes a point where they, like, they're getting a call from a police officer, like, hey, I've brought in 15 gun cases and he hasn't taken any of them. Like, if that happens, then they're going to look. But if there's not, like, if people aren't rioting in the streets about it, then they're probably not ever even going to look, because that's what they hire us to do. Like, that's our job.
Right. Right.
And they're good about not micromanaging us and letting us really use our discretion. Which, man, sometimes, you know, I'll say not our county, but some other counties, you know, the police work just isn't there. So you, like,
definitely not in your county.
No, definitely not my county, but other counties, like, the police work won't be there. So it's like you got a felon with a gun, but the traffic stop is garbage. The search is garbage, you know? And it's just like everything starts piling up and you're like, I get that there is a gun here and this guy's a felon, but because of X, Y, and Z at the beginning, we're not going to file this charge because it's crazy.
Because, like, it'd probably end up getting thrown out by...
It might, yeah.
Yeah, well.
It might get thrown out, or it's just not just. I mean, that's one of the biggest things.
Well, that's good for you. I like having people like Corey, because, like, I respect Corey, and I know Corey is a balanced person.
Right.
But then I find people that in my previous, you know, careers, and then in my internships that I'm doing now, like, I'll meet an ADA where, like, they don't care about just, like, straight up ruining a guy's life whenever it was an honest mistake.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe it wasn't a mistake, but it was a bad deed done with a good intention.
Right.
Right. Like, maybe doing, you know, a certain type of trade work without the proper licensing.
Right.
Or the proper, you know, stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Those are the worst. I hate those cases. I get, on misdemeanor, I used to get a lot of, like, selling alcohol without a license.
Yeah.
I was like, you kidding me right now?
Yeah.
This is stupid. Because that should be a fine. That should be a fine from some administration.
Yeah.
Like, whoever's in charge, like, the food drug people for Oklahoma. I'm not from Oklahoma. I don't know what it's called. But those people should come in. They should just be like, hey, we're writing you a ticket for this thing and make it expensive enough where they'd never want to do it again.
Yeah.
I don't know why this is, like, a criminal charge.
Why,
like,
is it a felony, like, you know?
It's wild.
To do certain, like, it's, and I'm like, you know, like, like, you'll have guys that go in there that are young, they're just good old boys, and they find this little lady, and they're like, yeah, I'll do it for you, you know, but then that little lady thinks that, you know, it wasn't done properly or something, even though it was done perfectly fine, but because that person didn't do something, like, per permit or something like that, then they ruin that guy's life, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's just like one of those things where, and then the ADA is like, yeah, we'll do this, you know, why not? It's something to do.
I have 500 open cases. I can tell you that I have never just said, oh, yeah, it's something to do.
Yeah.
Well, I've got enough.
I feel like some of those smaller counties, like, they do that sometimes. Yeah.
I would not.
It's something to do. You know, this is interesting. Let's make this blow up.
Yeah. I've only had one case where it's been, like, a contractor, and the guy caused, like, $14,000 worth of damage to the person's house. But I've only ever had one case like that.
Yeah.
Just because, like, in Oklahoma County, it's like, if you get it done, you can usually work it out with the people that give you the permits and stuff. You can usually work it out with them afterwards and kind of get it figured out before it's like, okay, well, let's bring criminal charges against somebody.
Yeah, I just think it's, I don't know. It's been really interesting opening my eyes to, like, you know, not
poorly written laws.
Well, they're poorly written laws, but also just, like, how human law is.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's very, I didn't think, like, in law school, we think more in the black and white. We understand there's gray, but then we get to see the gray.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Corey gets to implement the gray.
I live in the gray.
He is the gray.
I am the gray.
He literally is black and white.
That's so true.
So gray. That's so how gray true. He is.
Kind of turned into brown, but yes.
Yeah.
100%. Know.
I don't see color.
Oh,
that's literally fair. I don't see color.
That's fair.
Yeah, that's fair. Fair. Yeah,
forgot about that.
Yeah, I see some colors. No, but that's one thing I've realized is, like, you know, like with my boss, I'd be like, yeah, but what's the judge going to think, or what's the jury going to think? Yeah, that's what the law says. What are the optics?
Yeah,
You know, and that's one I, my previous firm I was with, you know, I was got depositions, and his whole thing in the deposition was, and I really learned from this, was optics. He's less, he cares less about what we're getting point by point on the law and more about like the optics of how it's going to look, how that testimony is going to look, how that witness is going to look.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, but like, he's not giving us anything we can use. He's like, oh. He's going to be great. He's going to make him look so bad.
Yeah.
You know, he came in with his pants undone, you know, kind of stuff. Like, it was.
That stuff really matters, though.
Mm-hmm.
When you go to trial and everything, one thing that my old supervisor told me was, you know, it's not like you don't want to put on an act. You want to be you.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you're putting on an act.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, everything you do, make sure you do it with intention.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like even how you're sitting in the chair, if the jury's watching you, you know, lounging around in your trial where you're the state trying to put this guy in prison or something,
mm-hmm.
they're going to look at you and think you're not taking this seriously, and they're not going to take it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like it's an act, but you need to be more intentional about everything that you do and what your body language and everything says.
Yeah. I've never been in a real trial like you guys. But in trial practice class in law school, my 3L year, we had one of those mock trials, and the other side totally found a hole in our case and made a great argument. And I'm sitting at the other table and I go, you know, kind of put my head down like crap.
No.
Like, and then like, you know, our professor pointed that out, like the jury saw that, mm-hmm. like, don't do that. And I was like,
stoic.
I'm like, glad I made that mistake in school and not like
mm-hmm.
in real life. But
yeah. Another thing people do, like, because trials are nerve wracking. And, you know, I don't know if you ever really like get used to them. But like you get nervous or whatever. People like, you know, their nervous tics. You have got to figure out what your nervous tic is and shut it down. Because if you're like sitting at the jury table chewing on your nails or whatever, like the jury's looking at that, like, who is this freaking boob that's sitting here chewing on their nails, nervous to get up here and talk? Like, they have, they don't have any confidence in you because they see that you don't have the confidence in yourself.
So my big problem is that my nervous tic is talking. So if I'm in trial, I can't talk. So it helps. I'm golden. It kind of helps a little bit, but yeah, I don't. You know, I think. I've been in a bunch of, like, when I was a court advocate, I was an expert witness, so I was in trials every week, right? Mm-hmm. I was a witness.
Yeah.
I didn't question anybody like that, but, like, I was able to watch, like, the juries, I was able to watch, you know, the other side, and I was always interested in the body language of how either the victim or also, like, you know, even the defendant, like, how are they taking what's going on right now, and how are they looking, and it's interesting to see that because, like, sometimes I'll expect, like, if that guy's guilty, he should act this way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
But they don't.
Yeah.
You know, that's one thing I realized. Like, well, they don't. They think they're perfectly fine and they're right still.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen other people doing trials before, and I'm kind of watching. And there are people – here's the thing. We expect everyone to act – like they're some law-abiding citizen just mm-hmm. because that's who we interact with all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to understand when we go to trial, we're not dealing with someone who's a law-abiding citizen. Mm-hmm. So when we start getting into that, it's like, okay, well, we expect them to act this kind of way when this testimony comes out, but they don't think that they've done something wrong or mm-hmm. they think that like they're going to get off or they, you know, they've got a whole different thing going on. So we really have to be careful about putting that expectation on them because they may not look like what we think they're going to look mm-hmm. like because they don't have the mentality that we have.
The moral code.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or ethics. Or
yeah. I've seen people like literally get up there and it's like they're admitting it on the one hand, but on the other hand, they're saying there's nothing wrong with what I did.
Yeah.
I saw that.
Yeah. It's like
first
dude,
summer
no.
entering at the DA's office, I sat in a rape trial. And the dude was like so proud of it. He was like, this is awful. But he was like, she liked it, man. She liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, oh, he's just smirking. And you could just tell that this dude didn't see anything wrong with what he did. And then when they, I sat there when they found him guilty. Mm-hmm. They cuff him and walk him out, and he's just smirking, head held high, like he was proud to have been found guilty of rape. I was like, wow, that is crazy.
People live on different levels than we can even imagine, mm-hmm. you know, and I... Like, I can't imagine, like, I grew up around a lot of meth, right? And a lot of drugs. And I know, Corey, you grew up around some of it. And I know you had some history with it, you know, around that. But, like, I grew around it and I was like, I didn't think that the people that were next door who were selling, you know, gallon sized bags of meth out of their house, I didn't think they were bad people. Mm-hmm. But now, as I've gotten older, I'm like, oh my goodness, they were selling bags of meth out of their house.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. Like it's, you know, and like, and so your perspective changes, I think, as you, especially when you become an actual attorney and you actually get into it and you're like, oh my gosh, you know, how much, and that's one thing I'm learning from my boss too, is like, how much of a heart do I need to have for this person? Mm. And where do I need to know how, when do I need to pull it back?
Yeah.
And have less of a bleeding heart for them, you know? And like, we had a case come in, that was a rape case, and my boss like, well, you know, I thought he was perfectly innocent. Boss was like, nope, guilty. He's guilty. He's lying out of his teeth.
Wow.
And he's doing it for 40 years.
Yeah. He can see it.
And I'm like, well, he's like, nope. And he's like, I promise you right now, he's guilty. And I was like, man. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, we got to figure out a way, you know, help him find. I was like, all my brain was just, you know, how my brain goes. It's like, ooh, a tornado of all these different things I could try and find holes in and all this stuff where I could try and pick and pull and all this. My boss is like, well, we got to do the best we can. We got to do all that. But we got to understand that we're going to work as if we are doing our best to give the wall to the other side, mm-hmm. right? So that they can actually do their job. Because otherwise we aren't doing our job, but also we got to recognize that we can't get too emotionally involved because he's likely guilty.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably one of the, some of the best advice that, one of the senior members of in our office gave me was just a file is a file. Mm-hmm. Don't get too attached to it. Do what you have to do to make sure you're invested enough to protect the people of Oklahoma. But you have 500 of these, you know, move them as you can move them, do what you can do. And the 2-3% that need to go to trial, go to town, like focus all your energy on those. The ones that you can work out, work them out because a file is a file. You're going to have another one the next day. You're going to have 20 more on Monday. Mm-hmm. So don't get overly attached to them. Cause what was happening was we had like some people moving around offices and stuff, and it's like you get really attached to your cases and it's like you want to keep them and you don't want to leave. And it's like, but you're better than where you're at. You need to be somewhere good. Mm-hmm. You need to move up. And these cases, you shouldn't be dealing with these cases anymore. Someone else can deal with these cases. You're good enough to be playing in the big leagues. Mm-hmm. Go play in the big leagues.
Yeah.
Mm.
Interesting.
Yeah. Plus, you can get, as a prosecutor, you wield so much power that when you get overly involved and you get overly invested, it starts to cloud your judgment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So having that like, okay, I'm going to be invested enough to get justice for this case. Mm-hmm. And if you can help somebody along the way, mm-hmm. That's excellent. But you have to keep those walls up because if you're like, no, this is an awful guy, he's terrible, I'm coming after him, he's just a mm-hmm. monster. You lose that objectivity that's going to let you look at the evidence in a mm-hmm. light where you can really sift through it and see what's good for you, what's bad for you. It's just you're going to miss all the warning signs that are telling you do not take this to trial because you're going to take a fat L. Mm-hmm. And dude's going to walk and it's like, hey, plead this out to something manageable. So definitely not like you lose your blind. You have blinders on when you lose.
Were there times where like that was hard for you? Like, did you ever have like cases like early on where you're like, oh man, like I'm getting too involved, and then like you did screw up, or maybe not screw up, but found yourself getting too emotionally involved.
You had to learn from it.
Yeah.
I think I mostly learned that early on from looking at some other people that I thought might be doing that.
Yeah.
For me, it was the other way, and it was a lesson that I learned just today, actually, because there was a case I ended up ultimately dismissing today. Thanks to my supervisor helping me out. But it was a gun case, and I'm going to keep it really general here, but it was just some people were homeless. They had a vehicle they were living out of, and they were digging around in a dumpster. So somebody called the police on them. The police go out there, and the passenger in the vehicle, who was the driver's wife, had a gun. She's not a felon. She can have a gun, but he was a felon. Mm-hmm. So he can't even be in the car. Back then, last November kind of changed that law a little bit, but so I won't misstate the law now, but back then it was like, you're basically in possession of that almost immediately. So, they end up bringing him in, and it was a whole deal because felon possession of firearms, 1 to 10.
Mm-hmm.
So you're almost guaranteed sometime unless someone is like, okay, let's do something different.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to jury trial, you're guaranteed a year if you get a guilty. We don't always do that. We'll give suspended and stuff if it's like your first time or whatever. But I was looking at the situation and I was watching the body cam and the wife was literally saying like, look, I've been robbed before. We're homeless. It's dangerous. Mm-hmm. I have the gun for my protection. You know, and we need it. And I'm looking at that, and it's her gun, her backpack on her side of the car. But he knows about it. It was plain. He basically admitted to it.
Yeah.
But I was just like, I understand the situation. You know, I've been homeless before. It is dangerous. So how do we help the guy? So I went in. I mean, I went hard. I was like, look. Let's get him into this program and that program, and let's get him doing this and hooked up with the team so he can get the services that he needs to stop being homeless. And I was like kicking this case out over and over and over again to try to get him help. And he like was fighting me on it. And I kept telling his, he had a public defender who was really great. And I kept telling him like, dude, I'm not trying to screw this guy. Mm-hmm. I just want him to get it like some housing to take care of the homeless problem to then take care of the gun problem. You need less protection because you have a permanent place to stay. It's less dangerous.
Right.
Like I'm just trying to get him to a spot where he can be good.
Mm-hmm.
Because he hadn't had anything in like a pretty long time. I wasn't trying to jam him up at all, but I was so invested in helping him that I was kicking this case down the road too long and he was fighting me on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it got to a point where it was just like, I lost that objectivity of like, okay, well, we got to do something with the case.
Yeah.
You can't just keep kicking it down the line, trying to convince this guy to do something that you're trying to help him.
Right.
and at the end of the day, my supervisor and I kind of went back over it. And there was enough issues with it where we were like, okay, well, he's done enough up front. We're going to have, you know, we had to end up dismissing it. But yeah, I was so invested in like trying to get this guy, you know, off the streets and whatever, but he literally would not plea to anything. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to plea him into programs that were going to get him out.
Mm-hmm.
And we almost set it for trial. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of swings the other way because then I was like, well, screw you. If you don't want the freaking help and you want to take me to trial on a case I know I can prove,
right?
Then go and get your 10, dude, because we can do this all day.
Right.
Because I can prove this with my eyes closed. I'm going to have one guy come up. He's going to testify that this is his body cam. I'm going to play the body cam where everyone admits it. Mm-hmm. Like, that's it. Case closed. So it's weird how fast it can swing the other way as well.
Right. You think a jury would actually have convicted him on that?
100%.
You think it would have actually?
Yeah. I don't know that they would have given him a ton of time, but he had, there was a bunch of priors that he had that were.
Oh, that would, yeah, that would be okay. Yeah. That would pay into it. Yeah.
But they were old. So like me looking at it, I'm like, this dude doesn't need to go to prison for this. This is, you know, we can fix this. This is a fixable problem.
You know, it's really cool though that you have that perspective. Like, you know, you having your life experience that you've had gives you a different perspective than those ADAs that come out of law school that went down the traditional path.
Yeah.
Right. That have never had life experience, you know? Yeah. And, you know, what I've realized that with even like DHS workers with deprived cases. And I'm just like, come on. Like, you know, this isn't, you've never lived on dirt before.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's not like, It's not like they don't love their kid. Not like they're you know, they're trying to abuse their kid. It's just like they, you know, they don't have a house.
Yeah.
They're living in a tent. Mm-hmm. You know, it's still, you know, they're healthy. They're eating. You know, it's, I don't know. It's just interesting to see the different perspectives going into it. Like you're saying, like, you understand, like, look, I'm trying to get you help. And you invest it that way. But I don't know.
You're saying that there are all these like programs you're trying to get this guy in. Like, are there a lot of programs like that, like specifically for the homeless, or are they just kind of general programs?
Well, it wasn't. So Team has a great system.
What is Team?
Team is a, it's like a, it's like Bond. So it's technically like a team bond, but it's a company.
Gotcha.
That is funded to basically take people. So they supervise them while they're on bond, but then they also work with them to get them. Because a lot of the people that we have that go in are like, they don't, because they can't make bail. That's the thing. Right. They can't pay to get themselves out.
Right.
So Team is essentially supervising them for free.
I see.
But they'll get them their, because a lot of these people, a lot of homeless people don't have like driver's license. They don't have their birth certificates. Mm-hmm. Like nothing.
Socials.
They don't have things to prove their identity to get a job if they could have a job. Then they'll also work with them to get their, like, make sure they're not on drugs. They'll test them and things like that. And Team is good about giving us reports as well. And that's really the key. And that's why I love sending people to Team, because whether they're doing great or they're doing awful, I'm going to know about it.
Right.
I'm going to get a report in my mailbox. It's going to say they tested, you know, 6 times in the last 2 months. Mm. This is this. You know, meth in their system here, meth in their system here, then it's just weed, nothing. And it's like you kind of see that progression as they're working with these people, getting them hooked into jobs and getting, like, upgrading the quality of life. Dependency on drugs goes down.
Right.
And depending on how long they're on there, you can really see that.
Is this a state-funded?
I believe it's state-funded.
Yeah.
Huh. Or non-profit, at least, right?
At least non-profit. It's not for-profit, because we have another company.
None of my counties have that.
None?
Yeah.
Bruh. They got to get something. You can't just sit.
It's efficient.
They can't afford air conditioning, Corey.
Well, I mean, that's fair. Maybe
so. You're saying Team does a good job?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's probably not a state program.
Not this state. Not underneath our governor.
Yeah.
That's for sure. We're lost two governors.
No, team is really good. Now, I will say, Team can only do so what they can do. You know, they can lead the horse to water, but they can't make them drink.
Right.
Not everybody is going to work out in Team, because some people literally don't show up. Like,
some people just like drugs and they don't care that they like it.
Some people, I mean,
drugs can be cool.
Drugs,
sure.
You know, I get it. I've heard that.
Yeah, drugs are a great time.
I've heard that.
Until your teeth start falling out and your skin.
Well, then you've done too many drugs.
That's too many.
It's like sugar. You have too much sugar, your teeth fall out.
Well, how much is too much sugar,
Kim? Well, I don't know. You have your teeth falling out? I think that's our bar.
Yeah, your teeth fall out in both cases. Mm-hmm.
That's wild. Dude, what meth does your body is nuts.
Yeah. My wife's a dental hygienist, and she doesn't work anymore, but when we're first married and she was working, she'd tell me almost every day, this one guy, I knew he's on meth. I can just tell by looking in his mouth. I'm like, seriously? Mm. She's like, Google it. And I Google it. Yeah. I'm like,
no, don't Google it. That's awful.
It's also like the belly pooch. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Like the fat. So their muscles, it gets eaten first, right? So all their fat has nowhere to go but just down. So all their fat will just shrink down into like their arms and then like their legs and their stomach, and have like this. They'll be so skinny and like death, and then they have like this pooch on their stomach.
Interesting.
Which is where the fat's gone to. And I just
the crazy thing for me is just the skin. Yeah. It's like, I mean, it just dries your skin out. You get the little It looks like chicken pox on steroids.
Mm-hmm.
It's like open sores, basically.
It's because they're,
you
know, they're scratching and picking, and
it just destroys your body. Meth is it's wild to me that anybody was ever like, "Hey, this is a good idea."
Well, I mean, I take Adderall every day.
Well, I don't. I quit taking it, but
I take it every day.
Great.
I can barely function without it, and so, like,
legal meth.
It's legal meth, right? And if I take off, so I'll do like once a year, I'll do a 2 week
cleanse,
like doctor ordered 2 week cleanse. And sometimes I don't take it 2 days a week. Like on the weekends, I usually don't take it unless I have like a game or something I'm doing.
Right.
But like in law school, I had to have it. Like there's no way I couldn't have sat there. You know, I'm like textbook ADHD. Like I'm like,
oh, you are. You're night and day when you're off your Adderall versus on.
Yeah.
What do we call him when he's not on his Adderall? Dang, we had a name for him.
I think that's when you started calling him Super Coop.
Was it Super Coop?
It's like, oh, he's super today. He went Super Saiyan.
Yeah. But when I'm on it, though, it's like a euphoric feeling.
Yeah.
That where, like, everything, like, when I'm not on it, it's like everything's flat. And I can't...
Really?
And I can't focus on one thing. But I can kind of understand everything is there at once. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then when I'm on it, I can actually, like, oh, here's a thing. Yeah. And I can then, you know, just... focus on that until I'm done and then just move on.
The way it kind of worked for my brain, I got on Vyvanse, which is a little different, but essentially kind of the same thing. As for my brain, it was like, without it, I'm like on the freeway, stop and go traffic, you know, stop, go, stop, go. And then I take the Vyvanse and it's like, I'm just cruising at like 45. So I'm not zooming on the freeway, but I'm going and I'm able to like just go instead of stop and go, if that makes sense.
It's just crazy.
That's how it worked for me, at least.
Yeah, it's great. Cause, I mean, that's a good analogy, too, I think. Because, like, you're able to just get the things done you need done without having to, like... Like, my problem is I'd have what I call a freeze. And it's not anxiety, but it's an overwhelming sensation of everything's going on at once, and I can't focus on just one thing, so I freeze.
Yes.
And so I can't get any of my work done. So in law school, I would sit there and I'd just stare at my book for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd try to read, but I just physically could not read.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, I do need to keep taking my Adderall. Because when I was working for, you know, Cherokee Nation and Child Welfare, which is what I was doing before law school, I was always at court, and I was reading, you know, case plans. And I could just read the case plan, get up court, talk, and I could leave. Mm-hmm. Didn't need to take it. But in law school, I was like, I can't do this. This is not good.
You need insane focus
to
learn what you need to learn in law school.
Yeah, not look stupid.
Well, not to just look stupid, but just to be able to I look stupid plenty of times, and I learned enough to finish.
Yeah. Well, it took me a bit, but I got there.
Yeah.
You know, we all graduated.
Yeah, we all graduated.
There was a portion of time there where I didn't know because of that family law final.
Oh, gosh, dude, that family law final, that thing. You know, I was on lowest grade in law school.
Really?
Yes.
How?
It kept me from getting my Native American law certificate.
That's insane.
Yeah.
I missed it.
Did you get to take it?
Yeah. I was so...
You missed it and you still got to take it?
Yeah.
Was I in that class?
Did y'all not hear the story?
No.
Dude.
Yeah, you've... Oh, I remember hearing it, but I'm trying to remember that I was in that class.
It was Eddington. Biggie Ton.
Oh, mine was... No, I wasn't in the same class. I was with Judge Green.
Oh, dude.
Yeah. I don't know if I...
Did you date with me?
I think I did. Who else was in that class with you?
Suter. I think Jason Suter. He was the police officer,
Yeah.
Right?
He's a cool guy. Yeah.
Was he the police officer?
Yeah, he's a police officer.
Yeah, because he's the one that saved me. Mm. I was sitting there playing Xbox.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I remember you telling me the story now. Yeah.
I was sitting there playing Xbox, and then I get a text message, and I have studied like 6 pages of my 36-page outline. I get a text while I'm playing Madden, because Madden is life. And it's Jason, and he's like, man, that final was so hard. And I was like, what final? And so I say, what final? And then he hits me up and he's like, you know, the family law final. And I was like, that's tomorrow. What are you talking about? And he's like, no, we just took it. I was like, no, it's tomorrow. I checked my calendar. It's tomorrow. So I was very wrong. And I started panicking. I flew up there. So I actually took that final in 2 hours. And we were allowed
that
to
night?
Bring our... Yeah. When everyone else left, I came up probably within 30 minutes of that test, that final actually ending. I took it And so I had maybe 3 hours, 3.5 hours more than anyone else because the time of starting it, it was the 3 hour test and then 30 minutes for me to get there. So I flew up there. I talked to the lady that actually runs the law school and she let me take it and she got in contact with a professor and we didn't know. I didn't know for the longest time. I took the test. We were allowed to bring our booklet. Like we were allowed to have like our outline with us.
Yeah.
I put it down on the pit on the table and I'm stressing because I'm like, I have no time. Even though I still have my 3 hours to take it. I flipped the page on top of my outline. Never saw my outline again. It was underneath the pages that I was flipping the entire time. Never looked at it. I finished in 2 hours. I turn it over. I flip it and I'm like, my outline is sitting right here. And I have not looked at it. And I finished this final. So I'm like, well,
was it just because you were just like so like stressed out, trying to finish? You like almost just like forgot about the outline?
I laser focused in on the test.
Yeah.
And I was so stressed. It never even occurred to me that I have an outline that I can be looking at. I never thought about it again because when I flipped it, I covered it. And where y'all are talking about where it's like stop, go, everything's happening at once. My brain is there is one thing. There is one single thing and I have full sending on that thing. And if you ask me to do any, I can't have a conversation with people while I'm texting. I cannot do it.
That's a normal brain.
Like
that's how it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Well, that is how my brain works for sure then, because I laser focused in, finished it in 2 hours. I walk out and she said, okay, the professor's going to accept the test, but it's going to, he's going to, you know, assess a penalty. I didn't know what the penalty was going to be. I didn't know if he was going to take, you know, half off. I didn't know if he was going to take whatever. So I find out later. Now keep in mind, this is the last class, my last final. So we're graduating in like a week. And I know that we are not going to have these grades back by then. And if I fail this class, I don't graduate. Yeah. Oh, I walked. I accepted my little paper that had nothing on it. I shook the hand of the dean, not knowing if that
were gonna really
was
graduate.
Really going to... Yeah, because I had no idea what I was going to get because I took it.
So because that was an A class, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what I forgot about that.
We were in Hawaii the next week celebrating me graduating law school. And it wasn't until like the grades finally came out months later where I look at it and they were like, hey, you got assessed a letter grade for being late. And I was like, oh God, did I even pass a letter grade? I didn't study at all. I looked at 6 pages of my 36 page outline. It had a B.
Yeah, that sounds like Corey. That does sound like Corey. Yeah, that sounds like
freaking
Corey.
Jerk.
I had a B, man. I was like, yes. I immediately pulled over because I was driving somewhere. I pulled over, called my wife, and I was like, I got to tell you this amazing story.
Isn't it great when things just work out?
Oh, man. I'm telling you, sometimes.
Must be nice.
Yeah, must be nice. Didn't you have an exam where like you literally didn't have the last page?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You didn't have the last page.
Yeah. You were like, you thought you were done. You're like, why is it?
Yeah, why is everyone still going? I'm like done 30 minutes early.
There's like a whole other 4 questions that your test book.
Yeah, there's a whole other, yeah, a whole other essay at the end. It was like, man, that last question was hard about this, this, and this. Walking down the stairs.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, that wasn't on there. That was on, we had different versions, right? Like, no, it's all the same test. I'm like, oh, it was a different version of the test. I didn't have that. I didn't have that. That wasn't on there. Like, no, no, it was on there. I was like, well, let me go back up. Let me go back up. Hey, can I see my booklet? They go, nope. I was like, I just want to see if that question was on there, if I was missing a page. You go, sorry.
Yeah.
And so if you guys listen as you think about going to law school, here's a little tidbit. Read the instructions and make sure every single question and page is on your booklet. Because mine, after come to find out later, I didn't have the last page, and other people didn't either.
They do tell you to do that before every test.
They said it specifically.
But this was like our last semester of our 2L year.
Yeah, it was.
And I didn't care.
Yeah.
I was already checked out.
Yeah.
You know,
nobody checks anyway.
Oh, my God.
They were printing the test like in-house, which is fine, but they were having an issue with the printers.
And it was missing pages.
For like that whole year.
Yeah.
It was like every torts, final we went to.
They had to redo our torts one, our second semester torts, or criminal, one of the two.
Yeah. And then we started our test like a half hour late.
No, it's an hour and a half late. Because remember, me and Honeypot, we were back at the school at like midnight because we got done at 10.
Yeah.
Because and we went over to the stag and came back and played foosball. You know, downstairs afterwards.
Oh, man, they renovated that place really nice.
I can't. I think it was second semester, 1L year. I don't want to say his name. Let me text it.
Yeah, the guy.
I think it was a contracts class.
Yes,
and
yeah.
He thought it was like Civ Pro.
He said for the wrong test.
And he was like...
But he, you know, he still got a B2.
Yeah, he scored. He got a better grade than me.
Yeah.
Which figures.
Yeah, you know. And he's, you know...
Oh, jeez. That guy.
What's great about him, though? He has like 6 kids.
That's
yeah,
and he's like retired from the military. He's like 50.
Oh,
you know.
God. Well, you might as well just say his name. Jeez.
Well, he'll know, but no one else will. I mean, he'll know, and he knows we love him.
Yeah,
you know? He's a good guy.
Yeah,
and then sorry, go ahead.
I'm saying he has a job, so like not only is effective now.
Yeah,
I think he's a prosecutor now.
Is he?
Last I heard, he was. I don't know if he went federal.
Cleveland County.
He was in a smaller county.
I can tell you right now.
Really?
I remember he was telling me
on LinkedIn.
He was telling me about like some trials and stuff that he was doing or something like that, and I was like, "That's like a Tuesday in our county."
Do you remember? Here, I'm texting another name.
I'm just gonna listen.
Do you remember this guy? First time we took the bar exam, he was sitting telling us that he only studied like,
yeah.
You know, they're like study 500 hours for the bar and you'll pass. He's like, I only started like 80.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
I remember that.
I was just like, in my head, I'm like, dude, you're like at the top of the class. Like, you're going to pass.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't know, man. Like, my wife started this business and it's really taken off. Like, if I don't pass, like, I'm just going to build this business with her. Like, she's crushing it financially. Mm-hmm. And I just remember in my head, I'm just like, don't even say that, bro. You're going to pass.
Yeah.
And then you end up passing. Did I pass that time? No. Did I study 500 hours? Yeah.
Oh, man. I studied the first time I took it. I think I studied 200. It was like 200, 220. Because I just couldn't get down to Barbary.
Yeah, Barbary was the worst. All right, guys, this is an anti-Barbary podcast from here on out. It's just
we're anti-Barbary and we're also anti-government on this podcast.
Oh, well,
oh my gosh. Well,
except for
Corey.
Prosecution.
Yeah, I work for the government.
Yeah, he's all right. He's an okay guy.
I understand we need prosecutors. And, you know, Corey, you're a good guy.
That's right.
But no, mostly the federal government and they can screw them.
I think you should get back on topic on Barbary, though. On how about
Barbary.
That. So here's what happened to me. So, so you guys remember, like, I had a mess up with my degree audit, right? I was down 1 hour.
Oh, dude, that was infuriating.
And they didn't tell me.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, you just take a summer class. I'm like, oh, yeah, let's take a summer class. And still take the bar in July, right? They go, yeah.
No.
Well, the lady that knew wasn't one that was telling me that that was okay.
Yeah.
And I was like, cool. Summer class. Find out. Can't take the July bar. So, like, everyone I've studied with throughout my whole law school is just gone. So, I've lost my tribe.
Yep.
And I'm stuck here doing a summer class working for a boss that doesn't want me there.
Yep.
You know, because now I don't have a Westlaw account for a mooch off of. And then I have to then spend a whole another 6 months just in limbo.
Yeah.
You know, you guys failed. You guys, it's basically like I failed. Didn't even get to take it.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It was,
you didn't study with us, though, the second time.
No,
well, I guess your first time wasn't it?
It was my first time.
That's probably
because
we had that other like second time taking study group.
Yeah,
and I wasn't, and like I'm sure I could have been invited, but every one of us because they, you know, OCU hired a tutor for you guys, and she got paid per student. If I would have studied, I would have just been mooching off of her.
Yeah,
and so I didn't want to do that. So I tried myself. I wanted to just follow the program like they told me, go through Barbary. And do what I needed to do. And I studied the requisite hours I needed to. If you remember, I was in that room.
Oh, yeah. I was there. I saw you.
I was there every day. I did all the Barbary exercises I was supposed to do. I did. I didn't do all the questions necessarily, but I did all the main ones that they said you should do to pass. And then I did essays and did not. It was the worst pass rate in state and, I think, national history.
Yeah, it was bad.
For the UBE. And then... I was like, all right, well, then I took it a second time And I was 3 points off for Oklahoma. And I did it the right way. I said it, but then I had a bunch of stuff come up right beforehand that kind of distracted me, I think. Mm-hmm. But then the third time, by God.
Yeah.
Still didn't make the requisite score, but I passed. So.
Yeah. The bar exam's stupid to begin with, and we don't have to go into that. But I think Barbary is just the stupidest thing of all time.
4-hour lectures.
It's only good for people like Elise, who already like feel semi-comfortable with it. And then Barbary is just like a refresher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For people like us, like, sorry.
We got to relearn everything.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I don't remember contracts. That was 2.5 years ago, 3 years ago. Like, why would I remember that? But people like Elise, it's like it just stays up there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That never – I literally –
sorry, Elise. We talk about you a lot, but you're the reason why half of us passed law school.
Yeah, you really were our hero. Matchbox 20. I don't know. Is that Matchbox? I don't know if that's a Matchbox 20 song, but, you know. No, it's not. It's Enrique Iglesias.
So, for me, it was like I cannot do – so, Barbary with the 4-hour lectures and whatever, first, I'm going to be asleep. But when I did it the second time, I also, like, my wife was just about to have a kid. Like, just about. So I had all
your,
the
your most, daughter?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
My daughter. She was about to have my daughter. Yes. Yeah. So she was like...
The pride and joy of your whole life?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
She's so cute. She's literally the best.
But your wife was about to have a kid, her kid.
Yeah, my wife was about to have a kid.
Yeah.
Somebody, so who knows. But it was like, I can't do this by myself, but I cannot fail this time.
Yeah.
Like, I had, there's a point in everybody's life where they get their back up against the wall and it's like, okay, there's not a fail option.
Yeah.
It's you either freaking knock it out or, like, you die. That's just it. And that was
me
it.
And you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this freaking guy, I called him. So we had a study group that would meet. He was welcome to it. He should have been coming. And it was like,
I came like half the time.
Half. That's not enough. That was not enough.
But he passed.
Did I freaking pass?
Okay.
I did, but I didn't do
that.
I didn't do what you had to do, buddy.
No, I called him and I was like, if you don't freaking show up to this study group,
okay, you initially got me there. Mm-hmm.
But you guys actually, like, they took your study group. I talked to the tutor after. They took your study group and they actually modeled how they're doing the rest of the study groups from here on out.
Did they?
Yeah. So
he came up with that on our own. That wasn't her. She still
had ideas. It's not her. It wasn't her. But like now, she's trying to replicate it by getting like the groups kind of like team building in the beginning, get to know each other to kind of commit. And then one of the reasons I passed this last time is because I had a couple guys that came up there with me, and at least the last 3 weeks before the exam, we were just doing practice questions together all day, every day.
Yeah,
and outlining on the whiteboard all day, every day. And it was like, you know, we knew we'd be there at this time and this time.
Mm-hmm.
And we had our personal study from this time to this time. And then we'd come in and we'd do group chats and stuff, you know. And it really helped me a ton having that. But, you know, being alone is the worst thing. And being in law school and being alone, like, it's already stressful enough.
Yeah.
It's the bar exam is the hardest test you're going to be taking. And I don't know any other exam, maybe an engineering exam or something. But, like, it's a test where it's not, the answers aren't set.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to feel comfortable going into it no matter how much you've studied.
Yeah. And you don't know what you're going to get either. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing. Most other tests, it's like, okay, well, you know, you're going to get tested on this. Well, we have a general idea based off of like some statistics that these subjects might appear.
Right. These 4 topics out of these 12.
Yeah. But
it could be those 12.
All of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they could just throw like a rule against perpetuities in there.
Which they did this last time.
and just fail 20 people right there.
Still couldn't tell you what that is.
I think my understanding of it.
Nah, I don't
20 years of your life and being.
Really?
Yeah.
I was going to say my understanding.
No, don't care. I'm never going to use it.
It just, you just can't do things
actually,
for forever.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
Yeah, you just
like
can't 20
years
forever.
Or a life and being. It's a.
Yeah. Forever doesn't count.
Yeah.
Forever doesn't hold up. That's it.
Yeah, unless it's a marriage, right? That's a
yeah. That's gonna hold up. Yeah, that's gonna gotta lock that in. Till death.
Yeah. No. I just think it's. I mean, if we could just go into it, like the bar exam, like right now the UB Oklahoma changed, like our school changed the curriculum our 3L year. I don't know if you guys remember that. So I actually took classes that didn't count. So like commercial paper didn't count anymore. So I had to take another class to make up for it, to get my requisite requirements. And also our Oklahoma family law wasn't what we were tested on. Our family law classes.
Yeah.
Or yours was. Mine wasn't.
Mine was?
Yours was Oklahoma. Wasn't Oklahoma based, I don't think, was it? Or was it model code?
Who did I have for that? Family law. That was, wait.
I think I had Eddington.
I think I did have Eddington.
Yeah, but so you had your 3L year though, right?
Yeah, I think I did.
Yeah, so like that was after we already switched to the UBE curriculum from the Oklahoma based curriculum.
So mine count. And he very often would say things like, okay, in Oklahoma, it kind of works like this, but we're going to look at this way.
Yeah, and that's because we're now, and that's because I changed the curriculum from Oklahoma. So my family law was Oklahoma based. So the law, the book I have says Oklahoma family law on it.
Well, that's not going to work.
No. So like if I had any family law questions, I was walking into basically the Thunderdome.
Yeah.
You know, it just wasn't going to work.
Kind of like our ethics class was supposed to prepare us for the
MPRE,
yeah. But it was more for the professors' like amusement to see, like, just to throw around like ethical scenarios, like, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And then it's like, oh, come to find out, this was supposed to prepare us for the MPRE.
Yeah.
No.
So here's my thought. I've been thinking about this a lot lately because I haven't taken the bar 3 times. And I realize, like, and I had guys who are like, you know, we have people online who were complaining about OCU's scores being so low. And I've gotten some discussions about it to where, like, well, the professors need to be fired, the dean's the problem, you know. And I think what it goes back to is an evolution of the curriculum needs to change. Like, the curriculum mm-hmm. needs to evolve.
Yeah.
And it needs to be – and also the student base that they're bringing in isn't very high to begin with.
Right, yeah.
Like, I'm
they didn't get into OU mm-hmm. for a reason.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Like, no, I get it. Like, I'm one of them. Like, right.
I am too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there are people who could go to OU.
Yeah.
Did for some reason.
Yeah. Because they got, you know, that scholarship. So, like, Corey, you got a scholarship, I think, most of it, right?
I got a scholarship.
And I had a scholarship my first semester. And so they tried to make it even for us to come in, but, like, bring it. And they didn't have, my first year, but 2017, we didn't even have a dean for a year.
That's weird. I don't think that's how it's supposed to work.
It's not. So, like, they just had professors just doing whatever, you know, it felt like, but when it comes to, like, the curriculum at OCU and, like, with law schools in general, they say, it's not just about passing the bar. It's about getting an education in the law and being able to critical think, which I think we got that. But also, I think they need to have a portion of each section we're learning. Like, here's how this will be tested on the bar.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I switched to Adapt-A-Bar, because Adapt-A-Bar, every freaking video, they'd be like, memorize the rule, see the rule, pick the rule, and then be done.
Yeah,
shut up. It wasn't a 4-hour video.
It was like 30 minutes. 30 minutes to an hour, max.
Because this is what matters for the bar.
There were some that were an hour. I can't remember which ones it was. I think it was property. Some of them were an hour.
Yeah.
But
it was still very pointed. Like, this is what you're going to need to know to pass the bar. All this other crap doesn't matter.
And they give you a basic outline to follow along. You could fill it in, you know. But it was only on the MBE. It didn't really get you for the UB, you know, the essay part.
Yeah.
But it didn't help.
I think there was a portion where you could pay for it that would help with the essays. Oh, the videos. So the videos, if you pay for all the videos.
I had all the videos.
If you go through them, the videos actually helped me a lot on the essays as well because I knew the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that was what was killing me, is I could not remember all the freaking rules because Barbara gave me a 4-hour lecture.
And then sang songs.
And yeah.
Or John on Adapt-A-Bar was like, shut up, we don't care, move on.
Yeah.
You know, like, and that's how Corey is just in life.
Yeah, basically.
So it kind of helps us out.
That's so true.
He's like, why are we here? I want a pizza. You give me a pizza. I give you money. We're gone. That's how it is. That's how it works.
That's it.
That's Corey right
there. Let's get it done.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Why are we worrying about this?
Yeah.
But I just, anyways, that's my opinion and I'm sticking to it.
I mean, that's cool that they're changing their curriculum, because ever since studying for the bar, using Barbary the first time, I've been saying, this is crap.
Mm-hmm.
This is garbage. I was not prepared for this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
3 years. I mean, I appreciate what I learned in law school, but I don't appreciate, like, the lack of preparedness for the bar exam.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we're going to teach you the philosophy of law. Well, that doesn't help me for the bar exam.
Yeah.
So what is the point of that?
Mm-hmm.
I've just been like, like, I despise the legal education system. I despise it. It's stupid. Yeah. It hasn't changed in 60 years.
Yeah. That's true.
Why, like, first time we took the bar, July of 21, my brother is taking it in Utah. You know, it's in Utah, they had the option to take it remote. They still had like COVID stuff. And so it's like he and his wife, they're taking it together. They chose to take it remote. Multiple choice and essay on the computer.
Mm-hmm.
We had a freaking Scantron. This is 2021 at the point. Who still uses a freaking Scantron?
That's true. That's a fair point.
I'm like,
I can't like Scantron personally.
Of course you do.
You gotta take 15 seconds to fill in the freaking bubble.
Yeah.
It's just.
But the thing is, I read better on an actual paper than I do on a screen.
Okay. Okay. He had a. Yeah.
I'm that guy.
Okay. I get that.
I'm old.
I get that. But then it's like, how do I know the Scantron's getting graded correctly?
That's fair. Yeah.
Whereas my brother, who's taking literally the same test, the UBE, and he's taking it on the computer. Why is that?
Mm-hmm.
That is point. Stupid.
That's a good point. Yeah. But I think a big issue other than just that is also like the way that they grade the bar too is they, you know, Oklahoma bar, people are like, well, it was, you know, it's not any harder. They're just different. Right. But I think what our tutor was telling me was they actually have a more strict rubric they have to follow in the UBE. And that's why they are theorizing why the grades are so, why the scores are so much lower right now.
Right.
Is because the rubric on the essays are harder, but also on the MBE, I don't know if you guys knew this. Do you guys know how they actually score the UBE or the MBE?
No.
So
if people are listening, the MBE is the multiple choice.
Yeah. So the MBE is actually, they have, you know, they tell you a certain amount of different questions, right? To be able to get all the fact patterns. So they have all the fact patterns, a big fact pattern bank. And they change the who's and the what's.
Mm-hmm.
But they have them. They have past scores from dating back to like the 70s. And so that MBE is actually, the curve is preset going in. So like they curve the test based on past success or lack of on that specific
question. Interesting.
Fact pattern.
That's wild.
Yeah, so it's not, you're actually competing against anybody else on the MBE.
You're competing against 40 years
of test taking.
Wow. I guess it'd be 50 if you said so.
Whatever, 50. I don't know. Yeah. I'm old.
But I threw out a random number, but then I was like, quick math.
Yeah,
that's not
I can't do math. I went to law school. But so the only way you're actually competing to actually move that curve to actually find safety is through the essays. Mm-hmm. And
that's crazy because the second time I took the bar and passed, my multiple choice score didn't change, but my essay score jumped like 12 points.
Yeah, because what happens is, especially with our tutor, if you just change the way you structure your answer,
yeah,
right, and you change the words you use and how you use them, then that actually can give you triple the points than just answering the question and dumb sentence like you know, our dumb brains do.
Right.
And so like that's one thing that I really focused on was making sure my syntax was correct, my spelling was correct, and my organization was correct. And I jumped, you know, I think from between my first and my second one, I jumped like 30 points or something like that on my essay. Like it was stupid. And like they even had me come in and ask, what'd you do? And I was like, well, I just studied. Yeah. I didn't use Arbery this time, really, is what it was. And I kind of focused on it. But you can get more points on your essay, especially on MPT. People kind of throw MPT out like it's not worth even studying or practicing. But that's 20% of your essay score.
Yeah.
And you can literally get 100% on that if you just do the structure correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're almost guaranteed 20%.
Yeah.
But most people don't ever study it, so they don't know how to do the structure, so they lose that basic 20%.
And if you lose that 20%, I mean, you're starting at your max points at an 80.
Yeah.
Like, that's not great.
Nope.
I mean, those are free points sitting on the table.
Yeah. And so, you know, I had to really start honing in how I did those two things. And I still focus on MBE, but I realized that no matter what I do on that, as long as I get my questions done and I understand what's there, I'm not going to change how that affects me. This is where Milt effects is going to be in the essays and the PT.
So I took the complete opposite approach. My essays were just struggle bus hard. Mm. The first time I took it, my multiple choice was a passing scorer for the most part, but my essays tanked. So when I switched over, I basically took the approach of, I'm going to do so well in this multiple choice that I've got so many points to give so that if my essays don't do that well, I'm still going to pass.
See, I was the opposite.
You just want to juice. You just didn't even bother with the multiple choice because you knew you were going
to
do okay.
I did the questions I needed to do.
Yeah.
And I stopped and focused on the essays.
That's what I did. Because I was like, I don't want to say his name, but the professor who was over the bar exam.
Yeah.
That everybody loves.
Love that guy.
He's like, multiple choices where you can make up points. The answer is there. You just have to find it. He's like, they're not trying to trick you. And I'm like, They are trying to.
It's all about hiding the ball.
Stop telling me they're not trying to trick me, because they are.
Yeah.
The only thing they're not tricking you with is that they're going to trick you. They tell you up front they're going to trick you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I knew it was BS. And I was like, okay, I've done so many questions and it's like I can't get over this. I'm plateaued. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to focus so much time on the essays and what me and Stetson did. So I'd come study with you guys in the mornings. In the afternoons, I'd come back home. Me and Stetson would FaceTime and we would do essays together.
Mm-hmm.
We'd do like six essays every afternoon, evening. We would set a timer. Okay, 30 minutes, do this question. We'd find questions and we'd just do it. Mm-hmm. And then we'd go over our answers together. Like, well, this is why I put this. This is why I put that. And then we'd grade it against the sample answer.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, that helped me so much.
Yeah, that's what I did the last 3 weeks. That's all I did.
Yeah.
That's it.
Man, y'all went in so hard on those essays. We were in that group. And so what we did was we would have we would pick whatever subject it was, break it into sections, and then every person had to like pick a section and they would teach us all about that section.
Mm-hmm.
So you knew that little bit enough to teach it, and then you listen to everyone else teach you the stuff, and then we'd go and take an essay and we would take 15 minutes instead of 30. And we'd issue spot.
Yeah.
And then we would issue spot, and we never wrote out a full.
So would you outline it?
A little bit. It was mostly, it was like, we'd write the issue, and then kind of write a little bit of an answer. So it was kind of an outline.
That's what I did too. So I wrote, I didn't actually, because if I try and write an essay, I'll get bored.
Yeah.
Right? And so, and you know, people like boredom is just an excuse, but like I would lose interest. I guess a better way of saying it.
Yeah.
So a lot of my essays were me just issue spotting, writing the answers. I know the rule in my head.
Mm-hmm.
If I can write down the word of the rule, you know, say, okay, it's, you know, assault and battery, right?
Yeah. With,
I already know what assault and battery is. I now have to write it down.
Right.
Right. And so as long as I can get those points, I go check the model answer. Boom. I'm good. Move on. You know, and guys, and really, like for us who are just normal guys, average students, that's what we got to do. We've got to work harder, sometimes not smarter, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes you got to, you know, because we're not going to work smart.
Look, I've spent a career of not trying, especially in school. I mean, so I took a weird path because I did my first 2 years I did at a community college because I couldn't afford to go anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And I paid for it through working. So I was like, I don't have time to do anything else either. And then from there, I went to my last 2 years were at FIU. And I didn't have to try like at all in community college. I was like the smartest person in every classroom.
Yeah.
And I literally never opened a book.
Yeah.
Cause it's just community college. That's just how it is. Then when I went to FIU, my first two semesters, I had to withdraw from classes cause I was literally bombing. And then I was like, okay, I got to try a little bit. So I would study a little bit, but then most of my stuff ended up being able to be done online, which means I could easily, like, I could navigate that super easy because it wasn't like, it was just like writing papers and stuff. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a lot of craziness.
What was your undergrad in?
Communication arts.
Okay.
So not like the normal communication, but like managerial, nonverbal, building teams, things like that. Interpersonal stuff.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just wanted to know for context.
Yeah. So doing all of that, which helps a ton when I'm negotiating and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And what I do. It is really perfect for what I do. But so doing that, I mean, once I got into those classes that were more core classes, that stuff that I understood and was interested in, so it really wasn't even difficult. So because when I was engaged, I was really engaged. It was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So then I stopped trying again. Well, then I take 3 years off mm-hmm. to put my wife through school and then move out to Oklahoma to start, you know, doing this. And I'm like, I didn't have to work because my wife had a job. Mm-hmm. Like, I what was
the feeling.
Oh, it was great. It was so awesome. Yeah, it was amazing. And I was like, I don't have to try anymore. But then I tried like my first year. But then I was like, dude, I don't have to try. Then I get to the bar and I'm like, oh, this actually is a test.
You gotta try.
Yeah. Like the what it was I could pay attention enough in class where the test wasn't smarter than me.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got to the bar, I was like, okay, the test is smarter than me. Mm-hmm. I need to be smarter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And everything else was like, I need to pay more attention. This was like, I need to learn more. Mm-hmm. And that's really the switch that I had to flip. And I had to work so much harder to be smarter.
That's how I was too. And I think you said earlier, like when you took it the second time, you're like, failure wasn't an option.
Yeah.
Like mm-hmm. That was me too. Like my wife wasn't working. Mm-hmm. Her job was stay at home mom. I had two kids by this time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, if I do not pass, my family does not get provided for. Like,
yeah,
you're suffering like, for another 6 months at least.
Yeah. And so like, I was just like, I have to pass. I have to pass. And mm-hmm. I was literally every day was like in my head, I was telling myself it's life or death.
Mm-hmm.
And I passed 1 point over the minimum score.
Oh man.
So I told you guys my score.
Right? I don't remember your score.
You don't remember my score? My passing score? So I still have not made a passing score.
What are you talking about?
I made a 263.5.
What? Get out of here. Get out of here.
They rounded me up.
No.
I'm not even kidding. I can show you the paper.
Dude, who's
they rounded you up?
They rounded me up, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know they would even do that.
I didn't either, but God bless them.
I know someone that failed by 1 point.
Yeah.
And they were real upset about it.
Yeah. So maybe we shouldn't put that part in the podcast. I don't know. Let's make a whole other one. So I had to score a half a point less than what the passing score was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The first time I was like 6 points off. I was like, that's close. But if I was 1 point off, I think that'd be way worse. Because you were close.
I mean, that's one question.
Yeah, well, I was not even a question. I mean, that was the problem.
Oh, yeah, you weren't even a question.
Yeah, that was the problem, I think, was the issue. And the thing is, like, with me, like, you guys had your backs against the wall because you had to fulfill that part in your life where you had to be a father and a provider, right? My wife is doing, like, she's fine, right? I don't have to provide for her. She has a full-time job. She's a monster,
yeah,
you know, in the best ways, but... And so, like, mine was more like I just got – my mental health wasn't well.
Yeah.
And
– mine was terrible.
Yeah. And so, like, if I didn't pass, like, I didn't know what I was going to do.
Right.
Yeah.
With – like, I just – like, I like there wasn't an option at that point because it's like, well, you have put your wife through so much, you know, horrible life for the past few years going through law school, having to deal with your – you know, late night studying and depression and mental health stuff. And, you know, who would I be if I let myself fail again?
Yeah.
You know, and that was what mine was like, what kind of husband doesn't, because I'm putting our family on hold, yeah. Right? We haven't had kids yet. We're waiting until I got out of law school, got in our career, and then we're starting a family, right?
Yeah.
So like I was the one holding us back from progressing in society and in life. And that was what put my back against the wall finally.
Yeah.
Was that. And I just had to get over my own head. But I think everyone goes through that. And I think people who are going into law school, a lot of them don't even have the right perspective to even understand what they're getting themselves into until they're in it.
Yeah.
And they don't know, like you said, Corey, you know, you might be the smartest guy in community college.
Yeah.
Right? But you get to law school, everyone in there not only are as smart as you, some of them are smarter.
Yeah.
But they also had the upbringing and the tools provided to them to be successful in studying in school academically and in life just because of the way they were raised. Like me, my family, we didn't have, like, if I got a C and my parents are like, well, did you try your hardest? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, cool, that's all we care about. You know, they didn't care what grades I got. They didn't care what I did. They just like, well, are you happy? Yeah. All right.
There's probably a fourth of our class whose parents were attorneys.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, easy.
Yeah.
Even ones that didn't even know their parents were attorneys, I found out later are attorneys.
Yeah.
You know, it's just...
Huge majority.
We haven't even had an attorney in my family, like, for 10 generations, probably, you know?
Yeah.
like going back, I don't know of any at all, or anyone who's even gone to a master's program other than my older sister.
I got two cousins that are attorneys. Me and my brother are attorneys. Mm-hmm. The rest of my family were like dirt poor. They were ranchers and farmers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can, yeah.
Which is fine.
Yeah. Sure.
Ranching and farming, still good things. Just yeah. not this thing.
Yeah. So there's no, it's a different thing.
There's no yeah. preparation
yeah.
for this
yeah, thing. Yeah, this thing is different. And even in like, when you get into even working, like you get from law school brain to now I'm in working brain. And it's like a whole different dynamic because I'm less worried about the law. Like the law is there.
Right.
But I'm also worried about like the optics and people and everything going on that more than I am necessarily. Because you can make the law do what you want sometimes, you know. It depends on how you make it look.
Yeah.
Right?
100%. I'm going to get up there and argue my face off.
Yeah. But, you know, and then I can argue the same point, but the opposite side.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't mean we're both right.
Yeah.
But who can make the optics look better for their client? You know?
Yeah.
But in law school, it's like all you're worried about is learning and not looking stupid and passing that exam and has nothing to do with what we do now.
Yeah.
That's the part that annoyed me the most was coming out, realizing I still don't know how to do a job. I spent what $100,000 easy in law school.
That must be nice.
Yeah. And that's just for school. $100,000 just for the school. And it's like you come out with all this student loan debt and you don't know how to do a job. Mm-hmm. Like they didn't like, cause me, I grew up around blue collar people. Those are my people. And it was like, when you go to job training or whatever, you learn how to do the job.
Mm-hmm.
When you go to a trade school, you learn how to do a job.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm going to law school and I don't know how to do a job.
Mm-hmm.
I know how to do, you know, maybe a fifth of a bunch of jobs,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know how to do one.
Well, it's like, think about it, like at this table right now, like, you know, you do, like estate planning and things like that. I have no idea.
No clue.
How to do any of that.
I need somebody to tell me how to do that.
Yeah, yeah. That's... Hey, guy.
Give me a call.
You know? But like right now, I'm doing...
I'm booked Monday. Call me Tuesday.
Yeah, well, I think I've got a docket. Anyways. But then you think about like, I'm doing four different types of law right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are four careers.
Yeah.
For different people, right? Yeah,
that's a lot.
Like small town lawyers, they do everything.
Everything. Mm-hmm.
And they do everything okay.
Everything okay.
Some of them do it really good, but most of them do it okay.
That sounds like the name of your law firm.
Everything's okay. Everything. You do everything okay. The okay law firm.
That's just the motto. The firm's Red Thunder. The motto on the wall when you walk in. Everything's okay.
That's amazing.
Well, I think okay law would be a good law firm name, to be honest with you.
That's true.
Might have to talk about that.
Yeah, maybe if we reserve that name after we get off here.
Yeah, probably shouldn't post this first. Sounds like a ticker idea.
Oh, man.
I think that's a good wrap-up spot, but I think we should do this again soon.
Yeah, man.
Maybe have more of a structured thought maybe too with it. Not just bull. Because I think we can bull crap for hours.
And we can do this for days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the bull crapping's fun, though.
Yeah, you're right. I love it. Yeah, you're right.
Okay, 30 minutes of structure just for Coop. Then we let it ride.
I need structure.
That's here's my new motto. Is just let it ride.
Let it ride. So everything's gonna be okay.
Let's get Coop on a day where like he took his Adderall like super early and it's starting to wear off.
Or just on a day where he didn't take it.
Yeah. We'll give him 30 minutes of like super structure.
We should do it
and let him go super Coop.
We should do it at his house where he's a little more comfortable.
Yeah.
On a day where he didn't take his Adderall, just let it ride, Coop.
Yeah. On a day he didn't burn the ribs.
Oh, man, you know what?
Neanderthal.
Next time, I want to talk about, we can come up with a structured idea, but I want to talk about, like, the way things are changing. Because things are changing. Contracts, that's changing. ChatGPT, man.
Oh, yeah.
I think we should dive into that, because stuff's getting wild.
Right now. Well, the thing is, I don't think it's getting as wild. We'll talk about it, but, like, I've had experience in my own personal firm where we've tried implementing it. And it was just chaos, just pure chaos, because it did not do anything anyone wanted it to do. And it was all, it gave us a bunch of stuff that wasn't even properly cited or it wasn't even true, you know, like Jordan V. Cates. Try asking to write you a brief on Jordan V. Cates.
Yeah, but ChatGPT-4 is not released to the general public yet.
Oh, yeah. We'll see.
Yeah.
And then GPT-5 is coming out next year. I'm just saying. Things are getting crazy.
All right, I'll research and we'll come back.
Yeah.
I did a whole CLE class on ChatGPT.
Oh.
It was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think I got invited to that, but I didn't go.
Probably so, didn't. Maybe. I had to pay for it. But.
Oh, well, most our job will do our CLEs mostly.
Yeah, I get reimbursed for it, but
that's where it's at.
All right.
Are we wrapping up?
We're wrapping up. All right.
We can keep going. Look,
I could go for another 3 hours, but
we can't.
We've got to wrap this up.
Yeah.
Your wife's we'll do this again. Upset. We're still.
We can do it at my house, too. If you want to bring it over, we can do it at my house.
Heck yeah. Let's do it at your house.
Be a little bit more rowdy.
And then the next time after that, we'll do it at Corey's house.
Yeah.
We'll take the 90-minute drive down to Corey's house.
It's like 30 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll do it in my man cave.
It'll be fun. Oh my gosh. Maybe just do that next time.
We can. I'm about it. There's a nice carpet there. It's good acoustics.
Dude.
Yeah. We're chilling.
I've got an office now at my house, so.
That's true.
I've got a nice office. I've moved again.
You moved it?
Yeah. Now I took over my wife. My wife no longer has an office because she doesn't use it. And I work at home on Fridays. We already wrapped it. Now we're just talking on our own.
We're just talking. All right, folks. Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
We'll do this again. Wait,
thank you for listening to this episode. If you know somebody who is planning on going to law school or is currently in law school, feel free to share the episode as we share some of our tips and tricks to survive law school and the bar exam.